Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Who's Who, National American Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, DJ Gatsby, also known as Mr. Growing the Sexy and the Voice of African American Literature. Today, we have a very special show, a special guest, this brother's from New York. I met him recently at an African American Black History Month event in Nyack, New York. His name is Reverend Weldon McWilliams. Weldon, how you doing, my brother?
I'm good. How you doing, brother?
I was taking my time. I wanted to make sure I got that name right, man. After reading all your credentials and your bio, I didn't know whether to call you Reverend Doctor, Dr. McWilliams. But,
man.
I think I
anything is fine. Reverend McWilliams, Brother Weldon, Dr. McWilliams. Is any of those are okay with me.
All right. You know, Brother McWilliams, I'm going to be calling you whatever, man, during the course of the conversation
as I get
more comfortable pronouncing your name. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, who's on African American? DJ Gatsby, you already know what it is. And our guest is Reverend Weldon McWilliams, the fourth PhD. See, I like the way that sounds right there.
Thank you.
I like the way that sounds. Again, man, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you got a lot going on. You're one of the brothers that I reached out to, you know, from the New York area, Hudson Valley, you know, Rockford, Westchester area, to be on the show. And thank you for accepting the invitation, first of all.
Oh, well, I thank you for extending the invitation. It's an honor. Thank you.
Yeah, I reached out to a couple of people. You know, Vanessa Green was on last week.
Yes, I did. I heard that show. I did hear the show. It's a good show. Great show.
Great interview, man. Fantastic sister. I had no idea, you know, she was so involved in so many areas of helping people, as with you.
Right.
And so kudos to Vanessa. Thanks for coming on. For the people who don't know who you are, you know, I got listeners all over. For the people who don't know who you are, give them a brief introduction as to who you are and what it is that you do.
Okay, well, most people in Rockland County know me as I'm an associate minister at the First Baptist Church of Spring Valley, New York, underneath my father, who is the pastor, Reverend Weldon McWilliams. He's been the pastor for over 40 years. And I'm an associate minister under him. I'm also very active in the community in regards to the East Ramapo Central School District crisis, which is big news in Rockland County, the public school system here. I've been a public school student and a public school parent advocate. So, you know, I'm an organizer. I'm an activist. Those in Rockland County kind of know me in that vein. I'm also an assistant professor of history at Dutchess Community College in Poughkeepsie, New York. I have my PhD in African American Studies, which I received in 2010.
Yeah, and yo, kudos on all of that, man. I got to give you a hand clap for that.
Thanks.
Again, that's a lot that you got going on, a lot that you've accomplished, and we're going to talk about some of your accomplishments as well as your educational background and some of the civil rights and political and social activism that you do. Now, you said you were from Spring Valley, New York. Which school did you go to, Ramapo or Spring Valley?
Well, no, I'm not from. I was born actually in Dutchess County. I'm a graduate of Ketchum High School. However, my father had always, he was the pastor growing up, so I had plenty of friends who attended Ramapo High School, Spring Valley High School, so I've known friends and I've known people, but I graduated from Ketchum High School, which is in Wappingers Falls, New York, in Dutchess County.
Very familiar with Wappingers. Well, you're an adopted son. Your father's the pastor of the church, so you have roots in the community, man, and kudos for that. All right, so I'm going to go a little bit about your education. Now, you said you went to school in Dutchess County, and you later went to Stony Brook to receive a bachelor's in Africana Studies. Tell us a little bit about that experience, and why did you choose Africana Studies as your major at Stony Brook?
Right. Well, I actually, when I went into Stony Brook, and I actually transferred from Hampton University, I was there for a couple years, and then I transferred to Stony Brook for financial reasons. And you know, I took a sociology class on race, and I was very intrigued by that class. And after taking that particular class, I ended up taking some courses in the Africana Studies department, and you know, really reassessing who I was and the shoulders upon whom I stand and the legacy that I'm a part of. I was inspired to really just learn as much as I can about my people, about African people, people of African descent, about their contributions to the world. And I just wanted to be ingratiated in that, you know, I wanted to be consumed with that. And I thought, why not major in it? And at the time I majored in it, it was only six other, well, I was six, but there were only five other people who decided to major in it as well. But I just felt like it was me finding myself, me getting to know myself. And, you know, I felt good about who I was and who what I was learning and about the contributions of my people. And, you know, I just made the decision to make that my major, and I went forward with that.
Yeah, well, kudos for doing that, man. African-American Thank Studies, you. Black History courses are very, very important in high school and college and secondary education as well.
Right.
You know, I grew up in the 70s. Where you know, Africanism and people getting in touch with African American history, Black history was very, very big. We fought to have those courses in colleges and in high school. So, you know, and I'm glad to see that you leaned towards that way, and you actually stayed with it. It shows here in your bio that you later attended Temple.
Yes,
the university.
Yeah,
and
so
again, African American studies.
Right. Right. Again, not, you know, after I got my BA, still having that desire to learn and having that desire to contribute to the field or to the discipline of Black studies, you know, I decided I was actually encouraged by the chair of the Stony Brook department at the time I was going there. Her name was Dr. Cash, and she saw my passion, and she actually encouraged me to apply for grad school. And also, I want to also acknowledge my late uncle, Dr. Oscar Williams. He is the only other person in our family, in my family, to have a doctor. But he also encouraged me at the time. He was living with my family at the time to go on my master's, go for my master's. And Temple at the time was the number one school in the country in the field of Black studies. And Temple's history is the first university. The Department of African American Studies at Temple is the first university to offer a PhD in African American studies. So for those reasons, I applied, and you know, by the grace of God, I got in, and you know, I spent 12 years. I spent 10 years there at Temple, two getting my master's, and then it took 8 years to complete the PhD from, you know, studies and actually reciting my dissertation. So I was blessed, and I was fortunate to come out of there with a PhD in African American Studies in 2010. Hello?
Brother Williams, are you there? We seem to have a bad connection. Again, DJ Gass's book club, book of the month for August 2016 is Pearls, the erotic novel, fiction story by author Hope McGill. Fantastically talented new author out of Harlem, New York. It's a great read, short story, but powerful, powerful impact and storyline. So if you get a chance, check out Pearls. It's the August, 2016 book of the month for DJ Gass's book club. Also, we have another book, very, very controversial book. It's entitled What If? A Walk Through Time. It's by an author out of Tampa, Florida. His name is James Horton. He says everyone should ask themselves that question, what if a walk through time? It's based on a white man who's taken an African-American studies class but feels he knows all there is to know about being black. And through a strange turn of events, he actually wakes up as a slave in America. His dream takes him through slavery days, modern times, right up until today's events that we're currently going through. Synopsis read, throughout U.S. American history, racism has played a key role in society. Often when we as a nation discuss slavery, it is from one point of view. The view is either as a black person telling their story of slavery from their thoughts as a slave, or as a white person doing the same as a slave master. What I would like for everyone to do is to look at slavery as if the white man is the slave and the black man is the master. Again, ladies and gentlemen, that book is called What If? A Walk Through Time by author James Horton. We're going to try again with Brother McWilliams. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm not sure what happened. I apologize. You just went blank, so I don't know if it was on my end or your end.
Listen, regardless, I filled the time with some music. I introduced a few books, but I just got to get a round of applause for you actually getting back with us.
All right. I apologize.
Yeah, man, whatever the situation is, we're glad to have you back. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Who's Who on that American list? Brought to our radio show, DJ Gatsby, and I guess it's Reverend Wells McWilliams. First part of the interview, he was talking about his education, which took him from Stony Brook University to Temple University, where he finally achieved his Ph.D. in African Studies in 2010. Yo, congratulations again on that education, man, and the particular course that you took. And people of color have a hard time grasping and understanding African-American history. A lot of people think that black history or African history started here as slaves, not realizing our history goes back centuries and centuries from the continent of Africa. So
that's right. That's right. Our history goes back to the beginning of time, to the beginning of time. We are the cradle of civilization. Everything and everyone has come through us, so. We are the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another discussion we can have, man. I'm definitely a student of African American history. I'm very fond of the continent of Africa and our contributions throughout the world, throughout nations all over the world. A lot of people think that black history, African American history, only contributes to American society. But our impact and the knowledge that we've shared is all over the world. Every civilization all around the world, you can see contributions.
Indeed. The African continent itself is probably the richest continent resource-wise, which is probably one of the reasons why it's so exploited and why it's been exploited historically and continues to be exploited even now because the continent is so rich in its natural resources. Within the African continent itself, there's 5 climatic zones. There's over 2,000 languages, over 5,000 dialects. I mean, all this is within the African continent itself. African people were the first navigators, the first travelers, the first explorers, and this is how we get to see our contributions and our people all throughout the world. So definitely we have contributed to world civilization, and a lot of these civilizations that receive credit for being of the most civilized or the earliest have actually taken a lot from African culture and the African continent itself.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that bit of knowledge with us, my brother. We all can learn more about our African ancestry and our contributions.
Indeed.
And that helps us understand the predicament and the situations that we face here as free slaves in America. You know, and I say that with an understanding that, you know, we are still slaves. We're just free. The laws have freed us, but treatment from the people and the society is very much like the treatment of a slave who's just been freed.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're going to move on to some current history. Education is profound. Please don't feel that I'm not giving it the attention that it deserves, but whenever I'm in a company of a brother with an education like yourself who has a master's, a PhD, I'm in awe. I'm a student, and I want to learn something valuable and important about the knowledge you have. So
sure.
I'll get you back on the show to talk about your education and how you share that
mm-hmm.
knowledge, you know, through your job. You know, I'm looking here that you've worked with Social Behavioral Science Department at Cheney University,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is a historical black college outside of Philly, and the work that you're doing in the History, Government, and Economics Department at Dutchess Community College, as well
right.
as being an assistant professor of history. You know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of good things you're doing, man. You're sharing that wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to these young people is very, very important. To have a man of your stature doing that, man. So, you know, I got the hand clap over here, man. I got it.
Thanks.
So I'm going to acknowledge that, man, because we want to acknowledge that, because education is so, so very important, you know, to the ability to communicate effectively. And a lot of us just don't have that. We have the will, we have the desire, we have the heart, you know, we have the knowledge. But without that education, we lack the ability to communicate our thoughts, feelings, and even achieve goals that we have effectively. We lack that education.
And if I can say so, I definitely want
sure.
to harp on the fact that it's very important that, for instance, here in Rockland County with the East Ramapo situation, East Ramapo Central School District, it's a school district
sure.
that is primarily people of African descent and Latino. And, you know, we want to make sure that our children get a fair shot. Classes have been cut. Money has been cut. The budget has been cut. And all these things help take away opportunities for our children. So, you know, a lot of the things that we see as far as, you know, education and our people struggling with education, a lot of it starts early on in elementary and all that. You know, we have to make sure that our school systems and our public school systems are giving black children, Latino children, all children, giving them the necessary tools that they need to be competitive in society. And when we see school districts not doing this, we have to treat it like it's a crime being done upon our kids, because I don't feel like I'm unique in any sense that I have the education that I have. I know that I was just afforded opportunities, and if more people were afforded the same opportunities that I have, there's no doubt in my mind that my story would be more and more common rather than looked at as the exception.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, I'm gonna stay with that topic about
mm-hmm.
the public school system, East Ramapo School District. You seem to have a thorough understanding of what's going on there. I know it's been in the news a lot. Though I'm from Rockland, I haven't lived there since
mm-hmm.
actually 1985.
Okay.
But I'm real in touch there. You know, I've got kids that grew up there. My grandkids were going
mm-hmm.
to school there. And a lot of friends
mm-hmm.
are still in that area.
Right.
A lot of dysfunctionality with the mayor's office as far, and even with the East Ramapo School District.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the major problem that has caused the downfall and the state of disarray that school system is in? What do you see that has caused it? You know, kind of give us some insight on what you think actually happened there.
I think one of the major things that has happened is more and more Black and Latino, because East Ramapo used to be known for its diversity. It used to be known for its extracurricular activity. It used to be known for its curriculum. I think as you started to see an increase in the immigrant community, as you started to see an increase in that community, I believe that you begin to also see a lot of neglect that began to happen in that school district. And I just think it was neglected for a long time. And also not just being neglected, but it was also taken advantage of. Because it was neglected, it allowed certain other, you know, allowed other folks to come in and to exploit the fact that that school district was neglected, and then allowed people who did not have the interests of the school district, it allowed certain people to take upon themselves leadership roles to continue to continue that neglect, so that other communities can benefit from the neglect of Black and brown children. That's what I think the main problem is, and that's probably what you won't get in the newspapers, what you won't get in the media. But I think a lot of the issues that we see happen in East Ramapo has come as a result of East Ramapo slowly but surely increasing its numbers in Black and brown children. And that led to a lot of people neglecting the school district, which allowed other people to get in these positions of power, and, you know, they were able to exploit that neglect. You know, when I moved back in Rockland County about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I had some, you know, my church, or the church my father is pastor of, is right in East Ramapo School District. So a lot of the employees, a lot of members had children or grandchildren that went there, and a lot of them brought to my attention some of that crisis. And just from what I've studied, I would like to say the root of it was neglect. And now we have people who are sitting in positions of leadership who are not, you know, they're from other communities, and they're working for the benefit of their community and not the benefit of the public school community.
Yeah, I understand that from looking from the outside. You know, once you have elected officials who you vote for with the assumption that they're going to look out for the best interests of your community, whether that's, you know, the Haitian, Jamaican, African-American, or even Latino community, and it doesn't happen, you're at a disservice now, because you voted these people in. They have support. They have, you know, backing, and they're not appropriating funds or programs that address the best issues of the students. And once that happens, the system is at the mercy of those people. So I see that is exactly what happened. I got a call here, and I don't know if they're calling just to listen or they want to speak. You got a call, you're calling from the 205 area code. I think that's in Alabama. You got a question for Reverend McWilliams or me? Or are you just listening? They're probably just listening.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks for touching on that, because I know that's something you're very passionate about. I followed a lot of what's going on through LoHUD, the newspaper, whatever that is up there, the online newspaper. Mm-hmm. A lot's going on. You've tried to get people of color, African Americans, on the school board. The elections have taken place. You had an outside mediator from the state. A lot's going on from there. I just want to give you kudos for putting that on the agenda, for bringing it to the attention and kind of galvanizing people, along with some of the other people up there, Sherry McGill and some other people up there.
Well, can I say this?
Sabrina, Charles, I'm just throwing names out there because the ideas of people who are involved with the school board and or, you know, the mayor's office trying to facilitate some things up there, man.
Right. I was saying that I know, I think the official position is, you know, I know a lot what goes on in the village politics, the village of Spring Valley, per se, that they are, I think officially they can't really intercede as far as what's happening with the school district. You're dealing with two different political bodies. But like you said, Sabrina's on the school board. We actually, again, we're trying, what we're battling with in the school board now is those who hold the majority interest, they tend to be in the Hasidic and ultra-Orthodox community. They are very, very organized as far as their voting block is concerned. They're very, very organized in a sense where they get about 80% turnout from their community. And that's unprecedented in any type of community. I know oftentimes we hear the notion that, you know, people in other communities aren't coming out to vote. But when you look at the statistics in East Ramapo, they come out and vote in their school board elections at double the rate of other communities. And, you know, we're just up against a formidable opponent. The Hasidic community comes out at about a rate of when the community other than ultra-Orthodox and Hasidic, they come out at about 14-15%, which is still it's more than the average 8% that happens in the other school districts in Rockland County. But it's just that in East Ramapo, where, you know, the interest, the Hasidic and ultra-Orthodox community, they're highly organized to the point where they come out at about 80%, and that's what we're up against.
Wow. Okay, I don't want to spend too much time talking about that, but I did want to give you an opportunity to address it because I know it's something you're very passionate about. And, you know, so a big shout-out to all those people up there. School starting soon. My prayers going out to those students, parents, the educators who are working with that school board to try to teach our children. You also are very involved with other organizations. I see you're a founding member of the Rockland Courage for Social Justice, founding member of Black Lives Matter, Rockland Orange County Chapter, as well as you working with the Spring Valley Ranch of the NAACP. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in those particular organizations, starting with the Rockland Clergy for Social Justice. Tell us about that.
Sure. The Rockland Clergy for Social Justice came about as a result of many in the community that were asking, when we were dealing with the East Ramapo Central School District crisis as well, many in the community were asking, where are the leaders of faith? What are their comments? What are their statements? How do they feel in East Ramapo? And I guess there were a couple of religious bodies that I guess maybe the community didn't feel like they were speaking up enough or speaking up at all. Listening to that call, you know, or listening to what the community was saying, I along with Dr. Oscar Cohen, who is the education chair of the Spring Valley branch and NAIAC branch of NAACP, we actually met up with a few rabbis, a few members of the Islamic community in Rockland, and we decided to form the Rockland Clergy for Social Justice to be men of faith who clearly look at what was happening in East Ramapo as a social justice issue, and we felt that the public school children were getting a short end of the stick. So we organized based on that, and I think upon that organization, that group helped move a lot of the progress as far as East Ramapo School District was concerned. I believe the Rockland Clergy for Social Justice, we made trips to Albany. We work in collaboration with other groups such as Strong East Ramapo, a group that's led by Andrew Mandel, who was an alumni organization. We just worked to put East Ramapo on the map. So that was why that particular organization, the Rockland Clergy for Social Justice, that's how that came about. My involvement with Black Lives Matter, Rockland Orange, came about in, you know, working with Sister Vanessa, who you had on your station last week. And we held a rally in honor of Tamir Rice. We were upset at the fact that I believe his murderers were not going to be indicted. And there was a national call from Black Lives Matter to have a rally and a protest for that in different communities. And I know I was one of the people who organized the rally even before Black Lives Matter officially existed here in Rockland. Sister Vanessa came out. She was one of about, I think there was about 20 of us that day that we went out. We actually went on Route 59. We slowed down and stopped traffic for a little while. We did our chance. But after that, we met up and we said we really needed to have a Black Lives Matter organization here in Rockland and in Orange. Sure. So that's how that came about as well. So it's just being an organizer, just being an activist. Once you recognize that injustice is taking place, you take it upon yourself to kind of figure out how you can combat that. And that's how, you know, most of the time I get involved in a lot of these things. So, you know, definitely kudos to those organizations and Sister Vanessa in particular.
Yeah, I got to tip your hat, man. Tip my hat to you for being involved as a social and community activist. It's not something that's glamorous. It's not something that you get paid for. It's not even something that you get a lot of respect for in the community. But what you are doing is bring attention to social issues that can help facilitate change in the community, you know, whether it's economically, or politically, or socially. And that's the importance of being involved in that. Again, you know, I was, you know, again, I don't live in Rockland. I haven't lived there for years. But I'm very attuned to what happens there because I have a love and respect for those people who still live there. And I am in the It makes me very happy to see, you know, young brothers and sisters like you and Vanessa standing up and speaking out on behalf of these people who, again, are a lot of minorities. I know there's a large Latino, Haitian, Jamaican community there, and as well as African Americans. And that community is so used to, you know, people in office or people they're voting for look out for their best interests. But the demographic has changed there. The politicians, the people in power, and the people in these offices, critical positions, do not look out for the best interest. And that's, I think, is a fact that a lot of people are starting to see now. So those voter registration numbers should go up. You know, the people voting should go up. And the people who are coming out to find out what's going on, those numbers need to increase so they can have their voices heard, not only in the streets, but in the voting booth, where it actually really can make a change.
Indeed, really, I agree with that. Yes.
Once again, everybody, it's Who's Who, and that's Franklin Black Talk Radio Show. We're here with Reverend Weldon McWilliams. My man, thank you so much for taking time to come out. It's only a 30-minute show. We've covered a lot of ground and a lot of topics that I really wanted to cover with you. Again, we lost a little bit of time because of the problem we have with the phones. I'm going to have to get you back on because there's some other things about your character and what you do that I would like to share with our listeners. It's not very often that I get somebody of your stature, of your talent and education and willingness to discuss, you know, issues that affect African-American people on my show. So I definitely want to get you back.
Sure, I look forward to it. And thank you for doing what you're doing. I appreciate everything you're doing.
No, I try, man. I started off with a book club. I was all about literacy and education in the black community. A lot of brothers didn't read. A lot of sisters didn't read. They said it was nothing that they wanted to read. So I got into reading. I got into the books, and I said, I'm bringing books and literature for people to read. If you're a kid, you know, we got children's books. I started publishing books, actually, because I didn't see the type of books that I wanted to read and or share with my readers. So I published two children's books. You know, a lot of women like to read romance novels. I published, you know, three romance novels. Urban fiction books, street fiction books. I published a couple. I got a couple more coming out as a publisher. But again, you know, my passion is education and literacy and the art of writing, which is something we really need in the black community. You know, everybody can sing, everybody can dance and play sports, but we really need our kids to read. We need to, you know what they're reading about, have them reading stuff that will help them, that's going to help them grow, and encourage them to read more. So when I see a brother like you who obviously, you know, education is a passion, for you to go to school for 10, 12 years just to be able to teach people about something that they really need to know about, man, I just got to, you know, tip my hat to you for doing that, you know.
Thank you so much.
I thank you. Yeah, I thank you, you know, for your time, man, and your service. Now, before we go, I know people want to know, you know, where to contact you, where to email, websites, or contact you about some of the organizations that you're involved in. You know, tell the listeners a little bit about how they can contact you on social media or personally, you know, to reach out to you and kind of support you in what you're doing with the school system as well as NAACP and Black Lives Matter. How can they contact you?
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, on Facebook, there's a page, Weldon, Dr. Weldon McWilliams IV. You can find me on that page on Facebook, on Twitter, @DrWeldonMC. So you can find me there. Those are the the primary areas of social media in which I, and Black Lives Matter, Rockland Orange has a Facebook page as well. Rockland Clergy,
sure.
Social Justice has a Facebook page as well. If you feel you can contribute and want to just be in contact and dialogue with any of those groups or with myself, those are the ways that you can get in contact.
Wow. Well, everybody got it, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and it is the main way to contact this brother. Rockland Clergy for Social Justice is Facebook. Black Lives Matter, Rockland Orange on Facebook. And I know the NAACP has information as well.
Definitely.
Reverend McWilliams, again, thank you so much, my brother.
Thank you.
You know, continued success, man. I know the struggle is real.
Yeah.
I know your work not appreciated as it should be. There's not a lot of unity in the African-American community, so you must persevere in spite of that. And, you know, anything I can do to help you in any kind of way, you know, I'm in advertising, marketing, promotions, strictly online, but I also am willing, and I told Vanessa this, strong support of the Black Lives Matter movement, as well as other organizations. So is there anything I can do, any way I can help? If you want to use my platforms in any way, please feel free to reach out to me, you know.
Certainly, certainly.
My door is always open, man.
Thank you so much. And as a man of faith, I'll say just keep us in prayer, man. I know you're doing your thing, but keep Rockland County in prayer and pray that we can make this county more beautiful and more successful for our children.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's been Who's Who in African American Lit with DJ Gatsby and my guest, the Reverend Weldon McGreen, the fourth PhD. You know, support this brother. You know, he has good ideas. His heart is in the right place, and he's ready to put his hands to work in helping, you know, black people and people of all races and religions, man. So, McWilliams?
Yes, sir.
I'll see you next time.
Yes, sir. I look forward to it.
Enjoy your week, man. And
all right,
let's
too.
Talk again soon.
Yes, all sir. Right. All right now.
All right. Everybody, don't forget to join me this Friday. My guest is going to be Just Mike. He's the poet from Chicago. He's actually been nominated as Religious Poet and Spoken Word Artist of the Year by the National Poetry Awards that are going to be held in Chicago on September. He's my guest Friday, 6:30 p.m. on the Spotlight with DJ Gatsby. Good night. God bless, and everybody have a wonderful week.